Hello, happy new year. Welcome to the first episode of 2018 of the Let's Get Running podcast. How are you doing, Jermaine?
Hey, I'm good, Sean. You good?
Very good, very good. How was your Christmas and New Year?
It was surprisingly good. Obviously, getting my fill of the good food. So nice. My belly's nice and round at the moment.
Nice. How many extra kgs did you put on over the Christmas period?
Let's say I'm 80 at the moment. What about you?
Well, I had a good one too. I was eating a lot of food in Ireland. I was over there staying with my stepfather. It's father-in-law was the word. I was over in Northwest Ireland, which is very nice. Had a nice relaxing break. Now back to the old grind, which is never nice, but hey, everyone's got to work.
And didn't you do a race out there? You thought you'd do a race and get some easy cash?
Yeah, I thought I'd pick up some pocket money, and I turned up to this place called the Ben Bulben 5K near Sligo in Ireland. And I turned up, 20 minutes before, expecting just to go and run a 5K and pick up a bit of cash. Little did I know that there would be a 28-minute 10K runner. Guy that
you thought he was just all the gear, no idea.
I did for about 5 minutes, and then within 10 meters, he'd already opened up a gap on me, and he never relented. And I think he ran 14:36 5K, which was pretty ridiculous, and I only ran 15:15, so I was a bit back on him. But it was a bit of a shock to the system to see this guy lining up. But anyway, hey, that was good.
You got a discount prize there, didn't you?
I got a discount. I think I got €20, so it paid for my entry. And a pint of Guinness afterwards, but that was about it. Yeah.
So I was on the buses, right?
Yeah.
And I'm driving, and I see these two old men running along, and they're running with a skill. And I'm going along, so it's between Tower Bridge and Rubber High Tunnel. It's a long, straight road. So I'm stopping at every bus stop along the way, and they're ahead of me. They're ahead of me on the pavement. I was thinking, they're going quite fast, but they look really bad. Like they're running along, knees are crooked, butts hanging on the floor. But the girl's keeping up, and I was thinking, bloody hell, this girl must be really good because they're shifting.
Yeah.
And then I'm driving along. I'm not even paying attention to the bus stops now. And I see half of her face, and I'm thinking, I recognize her. So I put my foot down, skip a bus stop, and then I see her, and it's my friend's wife.
Oh, yeah.
And so I open the window, and I toot the horn, call her name out, and then the other runners turn around, and they call out my name. And I'm like, who's that? It was Scott Overall. He didn't even recognise him. He looked awful running.
Did he?
He looked awful. And then when I was talking to my friend, he goes, oh, yeah, he's hurt his Achilles and stuff, and his running style's changed loads. I said, he's running like an old man. An Olympian, I didn't even recognise him.
But hey, we're at the end of 1 year, we're at the beginning of the next. Sort of looking back over the last year, any things you've learned or anything you want to bring forward this year, make changes to either your running or anything else? Any New Year's resolutions you've got, Jermaine, for this year?
I don't know. last year was obviously depressing. I got injured, couldn't run. So this year, I'm sort of retired, so I'm just going to try and enjoy doing other stuff, really.
Okay, yeah. Did you know how you got injured? Could you change that?
No, it's just Achilles problems and stuff, so it's just getting old, I guess.
Yeah. I'm also getting on a bit. It sounds like we're 50 or 80 or
something. I'm a vet, 1 week. I'm a vet, so my birthday was 2 days before Christmas.
Ah, okay.
So I just turned 35. I'm a fresh vet.
I'm also thinking of easing back this year. We're exactly the same year at school, so I'm V35 too. So, yeah, this year's going to be a year when I start to try and enjoy and not have the pressure of doing loads of events. So
this world summer is in Malaga, Spain.
Oh, right, okay. Even for the V35s?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, okay. Jump on that. You veto. I think for me, looking back in 2017, my big regret is when I went to Ethiopia and then got injured and then tried to then play catch up. And I think in 2018, I'm not going to put as much pressure on me, myself, to kind of catch up. If things go wrong, and you've got to get on with it and not worry about it. So my resolution, I guess, is to, if things happen, just move on and forget about it. Don't stick to the same goal you've always had. I've always wanted to be a sub 220 marathon runner, but like at the end of the day, if I run 225, which I have done already, on a 219, it's not going to change my life. It's not going to make a huge difference to me when I grow up and, you know, when I tell my kids about my running and stuff. It's not going to make that much of a difference. So don't get all stressed out about it and worry about it. So that's my resolution, is to just take it as it comes. This is the last year probably I'll be competing, so I might as well just go and enjoy it. And if races are fun, then have fun. And that's it.
And then you'll be coaching. So anyone that wants to be coached by Sean,
yeah,
email in your coach.
Yeah, and have a lackadaisical attitude to coaching. No, I won't. I'm very tough on athletes. Yeah, but hey, but one thing we've got to announce this year is, and we've got a very exciting competition we're running over the next, well, this show for definite, and it's for a lovely hamper of Meridian Foods. For the Meridian Foods, they make, if you don't know this, they make amazing peanut butters, but also a variety of different nut butters. So stuff they make, cacao and hazelnut butters. They make cashew nut butters. They do everything, basically. And we're offering our listeners the chance to win a free hamper of Meridian Foods products. And what we want you to do is, we want you to either tweet or retweet on Twitter, or to share to reshare any posts about this particular episode. So we're going to put a tweet and a Facebook post out. If you retweet those, that's great. You can also make your own tweet or your own Facebook post. Basically, help us to share the show. Now, if you do make your own post, we want you to write, if you can. This will quadruple your entry. So we're going to count your entry times 4 if you do this. I love listening to the Let's Get Running podcast while eating something covered in Meridian Foods butter. So nothing naughty. Like, it's got to be clean.
Blaise, this ain't a PG show.
This is a family show.
We want the good stuff, people. The good stuff.
So say if you eat it on toast, that's a bit boring. I know for a fact that one of our old interviewees used to put peanut butter all over a bit of banana. That was Tom Payne.
What about on Sean's toes or something like that, you know?
On my toes, anything. Anything you want to do, as long as it's family friendly. If you tweet that or Facebook that, you're going to win a quadruple
your entry. Just message in Morse code, it's fine.
Yeah. Just a quick idea on the Instagram front. If you take a photo of you eating peanut butter on something, be creative again, while listening to the podcast, so perhaps with your earphones in or whatever, however you listen to the show, we will times your entry by 10. Don't forget to tag in at Let's Get Running and also at Meridian Foods, so we know who it's about, and put a little comment in there about what you're eating and what you're listening to. And obviously, if you really want to win the prize, that's 10 entries in the prize draw. It's a real good chance of winning. So get out and do it. Nice one.
We're going to draw that at the end of January. We'll put details about the closing date up on the Facebook
and every
and Twitter,
entry okay? Gets 20% off the product.
Oh, yeah. So if you do enter, you do retweet, we will send you a promo code to get 20% off Meridian Foods on their website, which is really exciting. So get on and do it. Look out for the Twitter and Facebook posts, or just create your own, like I said, and we will enter you into a competition. So that could be our New Year's resolution, Jermaine, is to eat more peanut butter.
Well, I'm actually going to have peanut butter toast in a minute, but like you said, that's the boring one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I might have to mix it up and have peanut butter on oats or something.
Yeah. Sounds good. So get on it. Lovely. Well, this week's episode, we're going to do something a bit different. We're going to interview a few different people, and we're going to ask questions we've asked ourselves just then. So what was your 2017 like, and what are your resolutions and goals for 2018?
We've got two interviews for you. The first is with dietitian Reedy McGregor. She's recently written a book called Orthoxia, which is about when healthy eating goes bad. So she's got some hints and tips for 2018 in relation to her work on that book. We've then got a quick interview with Chris Rainsford. Chris is the editor, or the co-editor and co-founder of the grassroots fanzine Left Spike. So he's going to be talking about his running and
his thoughts on the grassroots scene in 2017 and moving into 2018.
So, without further ado, is that the right word? Adieu? Anyway, here we go. Here's the interviews.
So 2017 was a really, in some ways, it was a bit of a pivotal year in terms of where I'm going, what I'm doing, and I think the pain and the loss of my marriage, really brought all that into play, because suddenly it was like I was enforced to really look at myself properly, because I think when you're kind of in that state of everything's just kind of okay, like I'm not saying it's amazing or it's not amazing, it's just okay, and you bumble along, I think you rarely stop and go, what's really going on here, and am I really okay? You don't check in with yourself as often. I think some people do, but I didn't, definitely.
No, I
just kept going and kept going and kept going. And I think one of my I'm a perfectionist, and I'm always really open to people about the fact that I am a perfectionist. And I think while that's brilliant in that it makes me ambitious and driven, and obviously I keep on going, I think definitely last year I realised it was also my Achilles heel, in that I constantly try to distract myself through work and push and push and push. And while that was good to a degree, in terms I did get some really exciting projects and I really love my job, I mean there's no doubt in my mind I really love what I do, I feel very very fortunate that I've got the career that really gives back to me, but I definitely, I'm not going to lie, and this is probably the first time I've admitted it, I really did hit burnout towards the end. Like I think I got to the end of November, so the book came out in sort of the 16th of November, and I had this really, really manic month of promotion and events. And while I did them all, and I did them all fine, because you just go into autopilot. When I came out of that, I really, really hit burnout. I just was exhausted. I had never felt so shattered in my entire life, which left me very, very vulnerable over Christmas and New Year. Yeah. And I think through my own work, like all the research I did for Orthorexia, through obviously just trying to rebuild myself from, you know, obviously the divorce and then buying my own home and everything else, I've learned a lot about the fact that actually everybody probably at some point needs to go, hang on a minute, why am I chasing these things, and actually what's really important here, and actually why, who's looking after me? Because that's the big message. I think that's my message for 2018 to people, is really very much about self-care and self-acceptance. I've noticed in my work and in my study that, you know, particularly when you work in sport, it's a very extreme behavior, and I think I've spoken about this before with you, but it's a really extreme behavior, and it's very easy to go into override and forget that other things exist. And I think I've worked with some really interesting people last year, and it's been very useful for me to work with them and go through their journey with them and realize that they're learning as much as I am about the fact that actually, while it might be important to get a certain time or a certain pace or do a certain number of miles in a week or whatever, if you don't look after your sense of self and your mental health, none of that matters, because you just become obsessive and extreme, and you can't actually achieve what you want to achieve because you lose fun. Yeah. And I think fun is so important. Like I'm a real believer of that. It's just, I think anything that starts to cause you anxiety, you need to stop and reflect on it. So whether that's food, whether that's exercise, whether that's your job, you have to stop and go, okay, this is now not this is now not good, because this is actually having a negative impact on my health. So what might have started off as a really, really positive thing actually has become a negative thing. And that's kind of where I mean I talk a lot about that in Orthorexia, where, you know, people sort of start to talk about wanting to make improvements But actually, the real question is, why are you trying to make improvements? Why aren't you happy with where you're at? And I mean, sometimes we're not happy. Like, sometimes we really can make changes that help us. Like, I know with my journey, I've had to learn a lot about balance this last year and realize that, you know, I need to give myself time because I'm just human like everybody else. Yeah. And I can't keep going on and I can't keep constantly achieving. And I think that's the other thing, is that there's definitely this sense of, you have, like you said just earlier, you feel like you're constantly having to do more and more and more and more. When do you just go, actually, I'm all right with where I'm at. Yeah. I'm okay with this. This is good. This is good for now.
Yeah.
And things then change. And I think that was it. As soon as I sat back and went, I'm okay with this right now, because actually this is a very difficult time in my life and I don't need to be, you know, I don't need to be the next major blogger or the next major person. Yeah, I mean, I've never needed to be that because I don't really like any of that. But you know what I mean? Like, it's not important, even to the point where I have seriously considered whether I wanted to continue to work in high performance sport, because it became a very, for me personally, it became a very negative place to work,
right,
because of the constant demands and the constant
next steps.
Yeah, exactly. And almost like it's so performance driven, it's almost like people forget about actually these individuals, these athletes we are working with are actually people.
Yeah.
You know, the people you are working with are people. You can't treat people like that. And I think it's interesting because everybody goes, oh, you're so lucky, you get to do this and you go to travel and you do. It's not all glamorous and wonderful as people think. It's hard work. It's really hard work. And you have to be, I'm always really open and honest with youngsters that come in and say, you know what, if you want any sort of life, this is not the job for you. Because you don't, you know, you can't really, if I'm honest, you can't really have a family life. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
It's hard even if you've got a partner, because you're constantly on the road and you are living your job. That's what you're doing. And there's very little time for much else. Now, if that's your choice, brilliant, and go for it. But I think people do need to be aware that you don't become successful because you work with a Paralympic team. You become successful because you are getting someone to the potential that they have. Now, that could be a junior who, you know, just needs a bit of guidance. Or in my case, actually, most of the time I feel my most success is actually when I am able to help somebody and get them a better quality of life, so that they're dysfunctional relationship with food and exercise is under control. Yeah. That's actually when I feel my most successful, not when I'm working with a team who gets a gold medal.
Yeah. And that brings you happiness, which is what life is all about, right?
Absolutely. And I think that was it. I mean, so going into 2018, I mean, we're what, 12 days in. I haven't managed to successfully do this yet, but I'm still working on it. But my aim was to try and get a little bit more balance in my life in terms of actually having some time off. I'm really rubbish at taking time off in the week. So I tend to pretty much work 7 days a week, which is not great for your health at all.
No, not at all.
And I think it's kind of a little bit of, I suppose, it is one of those things when you're self-employed, you just feel like you have to constantly say yes to everything because you never know when the work's going to dry up. And it is a little bit of that. But I also have realised from when I hit a really bad place at the end of last year that if I don't look after myself, no one else is going to.
Right.
To be fair. Yeah. And I think that is why, I mean, I'm very much, when I work with individuals, I'm always up, sort of getting them to think about, well, what would be your ideal self-care practices? What would be things? And I get them to incorporate it in their lives. But I would be hypocritical if I didn't do that myself. And so I've always been very much practice what you preach, always. Mm. So one of the things that I've tried to do in the last few months is I kind of wake up in the morning and I have this headline. And my headline at the moment is very much about being kind to myself. So every morning when I wake up, I think about, what am I going to do to be kind to myself on a daily basis. Now, that one I have managed. So sometimes I'll think about my day and think, right, well, today's really, really manic. So actually what I'll do is I will make sure I switch my phone off at 8 o'clock this evening, and I don't, and that's it. And I actually have an evening where I sit and, you know, go out with a friend or even just watch telly or do whatever, but I just do something for me.
Yeah.
Other things are simple things. Sounds ridiculous, but I'm female, so I'll go and buy myself some flowers. You know, it's just simple pleasures. But I have started every day. I do work towards that headline every single day. And if I get to the end of the day and I think, have I been kind to myself today? And if I haven't, then I try and think, okay, well, how am I going to improve that next tomorrow? Because it's really important. And that means sometimes just even letting myself off the hook. So I'm very, very bad at trying to cram too many things into one day. And so sometimes that has meant sometimes I've gone, do you know what? Actually, really, it's ridiculous to expect to be in that place and that place and that place in one day.
Yeah.
So you need to actually cancel one. And and it's hard because obviously when you, like I said, when you're self-employed and you're trying to earn money and all those different things, you sort of think, oh my goodness, that's a loss of whatever. But actually what's more important is for me to have consistency in my work and the ability to keep on working. And if I had carried on in the way that I was doing, I probably, you know, I wouldn't have the energy to keep moving forward. So
no.
I've learned a lot from 2017, as you can probably tell.
Yeah, it's true. I think I was a similar situation. I was December just trying to do work as many hours as I possibly could and juggle so many little balls and things, but I haven't reached the reflection stage that you have, and actually talking to you there makes me feel like I should, because in a way, like with the run as well, I'm running twice a day and doing this, and I feel like it's my last year at running, so I feel like I have to finish and I have to get the best out of myself. But I don't really even look now and know what makes me happy about that. Do you know what I mean? So I need to think about that as well. I think
I was talking to a friend of mine last week. It was my birthday last week, and we were just sitting around having dinner, and we were chatting about life in general. And you know, I'm really fortunate. I have got some fantastic friends in my life, and they really are my rock. And they have been my rock. And we were sat around chatting, and we were talking about, I mean, and you, as you know, majority of my friends are extreme runners, you know, they're all kind of in that GB athlete kind of area. I mean, God knows why they're friends with me, but anyway, they are, and it's lovely. But we were sat chatting, and you know, and in fact, Holly said to me, she goes, you've done really well, like you're really brave and really strong to kind of get to where you are. And I said, well, I haven't really got much choice in that you either, like I said earlier, you either sink or you get up and you make it happen. But I think the other thing is, I suppose I've been really fortunate. I mean, I am an obsessive person like anybody else, and to a certain degree I'm lucky that, sounds awful, I'm gonna say I'm lucky that I've got this autoimmune condition, but I think the fact that my sarcoidosis, which is my lung condition, was so bad last year, probably related to the stress actually, it stopped me from hammering myself into the ground, because it's very easy. And this is what another thing I've really learned is that many of us are trying to run away from our problems. So most of us will try and find another form of control to help us not deal with that negative emotion. And so, you know, and there's no doubt in my mind, I mean, I think everybody does, you go for a run, you feel better, but then it can equally and easily become obsessive that it's the only way you deal with your issues. As soon as you get stressed, as soon as you feel uncomfortable in yourself because you're anxious or whatever, you feel negative, you go and push yourself and you punish yourself. And, you know, I definitely saw that pattern. I see it in so many people, but I definitely saw that pattern in myself. But I've been able to actually go and go, do you know what, this is not helpful. You have to learn to actually deal with your issues, because only when you can actually accept your problems and accept your emotions and understand that it's okay to feel equally rubbish as well as positive, only then can you actually have a really good balance in life. And I think I in some ways, fortunately or unfortunately, the sarcoidosis stopped me from doing that, because I think there's no doubt in my mind, with the year that I had, I would have run myself completely into the ground. I think I would have entered every single race and just gone nuts, because it would have been my way of coping. Yeah. But actually, what I had to do was deal with it. I had to deal with loss. I had to deal with grief. I had to deal with stress. I had to deal with financial concern. I had to deal with it all because there was nowhere to run.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and on a positive note, though, I did literally just went back to the hospital 2 days ago, and my lung function has now started to improve once again. So it does go to show that when you have autoimmune conditions, no matter what you read in the papers about different diets and going, you know, gluten-free and whatever and doing all these weird things, no matter what you do, actually, autoimmune is actually about taking care of you.
Right.
And for me, definitely, I mean, I can't say that for every single autoimmune condition, but for me, definitely, one of the things that my consultant and I reflected on is that the only thing that has changed since my last lung function is that I have started to take more care. I've started to make sure I'm trying to rest a little bit more and sleep a little bit more, and not the big thing, not go out at the crack of dawn. Because I think, again, I was talking to a partnership client base. I was had a meeting yesterday, and we were talking about how so many recreational runners obviously have full-time jobs, they have families, they have all this stuff going on, and they are obviously, that means they're basically trying to do their training at 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, naturally cortisol is higher in the morning anyways. And if you're then kind of, you know, you've had 4 hours sleep or 5 hours sleep because you work late and then you get up to go and do your training, you are basically putting yourself in a hole. And I'm pretty sure, I mean, I'll never be 100% sure, but my consultant and I are pretty sure that my sarcoidosis probably got worse last year because of the amount of stress I was under and the amount of lack of sleep and just lack of self-care.
Yeah.
So it's interesting for me that since taking a step back and going, no, I need a break, I need to stop, I need to just take an hour off here, and that's not going to be the end of the world. I just need to do this, and I need to buy myself flowers, and I need to go and have a coffee with a friend or whatever it is. Actually, things are starting to improve. I mean, I've still got a long way to go, but I'm just really pleased that things are moving in the right direction. So so maybe I'll get to go running again soon. we'll see.
Fingers crossed. The last time we spoke was a couple of years ago. Probably it was just after the Paralympics in Rio, I think.
Yeah.
So that's 2016. Yeah. If people haven't met you before, you are a dietitian. And in 2017, obviously, you released the book, which is Orthoxia.
Yes.
Can you give us a bit of a background about the book?
Yeah. So so basically, I had obviously written three books previously, all related to sports nutrition. And the publishing company, Nourish, had said to me, oh, we want you to write something else. What were you thinking? And obviously, because I do a lot of work in disordered eating, and I think I was getting more and more referrals, and I think people were sort of saying, you know, there's very few dietitians that have the same approach as you and have the ability to work, I guess, in the approach that I have in that kind of a holistic way and actually get the outcomes as well. And it wasn't just individuals that were struggling with eating disorders. It was also psychologists were keen to work with me. So it was an area that was becoming more and more important for me to establish as kind of my area of expertise as well as sport. So I'd spoken to the publishing company, said I, you know, was quite keen to write a book on eating disorders. The reason I ended up writing about orthorexia was because this whole kind of obsession with clean eating and all these health bloggers were coming on board promoting actually it's quite harmful advice because there was no nutritional credibility or scientific evidence behind any of it. It was just based on their own personal antidotes and that's not science. And I had an incident at Cheltenham Literature Festival where I was up against a very well-known food blogger. And I think I won't go into the details because I think most people know about this and they've probably read my blog and they've probably read
Wilson's articles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because she's written about it a lot. And I think that was it. That was basically what started the movement. And the publishing company said, this is what we want you to write on. We want you to write on, you know, orthorexia, sort of when healthy eating becomes extreme and goes obsessive. Let's do that. So it was an interesting one, because while I've done a lot of work in eating disorders, the orthorexia was a pretty new one to me. I mean, I was obviously, I've been very vocal about my opinions on non-qualified people giving out advice and celebrities writing books. And, you know, at the end of the day, I don't try and become, I'm not trying to be a TV presenter. So why are people sort of stepping on our toes when actually we've worked really hard to get the qualifications to provide advice? So that's how the book came out, really. And it was a really, I mean, I'm really proud of all the books I've written, but I think for me, this one is the one that I'm most proud of. It was a very emotional book to write. So when I say that, not because I've got eating problems, but because, as I've said earlier, 2016, Anderson 2016 was a very, very difficult year for me personally. And obviously one of the things about orthorexia is, like any eating disorder, is that you're basically trying to control your negative emotions, your perception of yourself, your lack of self-worth through food and body image. And in orthorexia, it's very much about eating correct, eating pure, being pure. Mm. And if you do that, then everything else will fall into place. And I think while writing it, I started to realize how easy it could be to get caught up in this, because I was in quite a bad place myself in terms of my self-esteem, my self-confidence, because of everything that was going on around me. So it's got a lot of me in the book, like in terms of, I remember meeting up with my editor kind of early on, and we were talking about it, and I'd written the first couple of chapters, and she said to me, I can tell that you have put your heart into this. And I said, yeah. I said, I'm not going to lie to you, Judy. I've cried an awful lot writing this book. And I know, obviously, never had that with training food or fast fuel. No. So it is a book that's meant a lot to me, because also I know it's a book that can potentially change lives. And actually what's been so nice in these last few months since it's been published is the number of people that have contacted me and said it's changed their life. And that is all I ever wanted for this book, was to raise awareness. It's not a self-help book. It's not a book about telling people what to do. It literally is to raise awareness of actually how things can become extreme and dangerous, and actually a negative impact on your health rather than a positive. And I guess it is very much about helping people to stop, reflect on why they're doing what they're doing, and thinking, is this really because I'm worried about my health or my body or whatever, or is this really something else deeper rooted that I'm trying to control? And like I said, I'd always said, even if it just impacted one person, I'd be happy. But I've been really, really overwhelmed and humbled by the messages I've had about it.
So that was released at the end of 2017.
Yes.
What's the next year got in store for you, do you think?
Oh, that's a very good question. I'm working towards a postgraduate in mental health and neuroscience psychology, so that I can consolidate my psychology that I already do. Anyway, so that's taking up quite a lot of time and energy. And obviously I've got Commonwealth Games, so I'm not going to the Commonwealth Games, but I'm working with a number of teams going to the Commonwealth Games, so that's also very busy.
Yeah.
There is another book in the pipeline, but I can't really say much at this stage because it's early stages. I'm still working with a lot of individuals, a lot of private clients, professional athletes. I mean, that doesn't stop. That my day job keeps going. And I've got quite a lot of trips planned. So I'm going to be going out to Chamonix again. I'm working with Robbie Britton and Natalie White on their training camp, like I've done for the last 2 years. So that's always exciting and always really brilliant. Like every year we do these training camps, and we've done them for the last couple of years, and they're so successful. And the kind of feedback is amazing. And we go the extra mile to try and really make it something different. So those are always really good. And I'm going to be involved with the GB 24-hour team European Championships. So lots of really exciting things going on. But like I said, I'm really, really trying hard to also maintain a bit more balance and a bit more time for myself.
Which is a good lesson for all of us, I think.
Yeah.
And jumping back a little bit, I should have kind of talked a bit more about this with when you're talking about the book, but do you have any kind of hopes for, it's not an industry really, but do you think things are going to change this year in terms of clean eating? Do you think you can see a situation where the influence of these people starts to rescind, or do you think it's something that we're going to have to kind of keep shouting about to stop?
You know, it's a really good question. It's a really good question, Sean, because I had hoped that things had improved towards the end of last year because it seemed to have gone a little bit quiet. And I was thinking, oh, thank goodness. It's, you know, the likes of myself and B and Angry Chef and Ruby Tando, you know, we're like kind of, it seems to be, we're very vocal about the fact that this clean eating stuff needs to stop. And I think we'd all kind of really pushed for that. And I know that between us, we'd all thought, okay, maybe we're getting somewhere. But it's really sad. It's 2018, January, and the bookshelves are full of a load of books written by people that shouldn't be writing books and advice they shouldn't be giving. And, and I just find it really, really sad. I was in the high street yesterday and I walked past a couple of bookshops and that's all there is in the window. And I just think, you know, all that does, I feel, is it makes people feel that they're not worthy of where they're at. They have to make improvements. Why? Why do you have to make improvements? Why can't you just be okay with where you're at? And actually, surely we should be writing books and talking about how you just make the best of who you are, rather than always trying to be aesthetically more pleasing or, you know, whatever it is. And I would love to say we're going to see a change, but I'm not convinced because, unfortunately, the society we seem to live in, it all does seem to be very much about appearance. And I don't just mean that physical, I mean that as in appearance of success. Until people start to accept, and I think also in schools, until we start to teach youngsters that success is not about what you become, it's actually about what you achieve within yourself.
I don't know
if it will change because I think even things like social media just make it so much more difficult. I mean, I've been really annoyed this year. I'm going to just say this one thing because it's really been a bee in my bonnet, so I can say it out and make everybody listen to it. I've been quite like, obviously I've got a lot of people that follow me and that's great, and I'm you know, I don't ask for followers. I actually have this real sense of, feel like this massive sense of responsibility when I have all these followers because I'm so aware of how social media impacts individuals. And I'm also very, very aware that a lot of the people that follow me are probably people that who are vulnerable and susceptible to not being very kind to themselves and possibly struggle with self-care and self-acceptance. And so unlike the health bloggers that don't give a monkeys, I am really, really, really careful about what I put on there. And somebody, I did put a post up the other day because a lot of my followers and clients were saying, why don't you ever put posts up about what you eat? You know, you're a dietitian. Surely we can learn from you. And it'd be great to know what you're doing. And I was like, because it's not relevant. What I eat is not relevant to you. Yeah. And that's the thing. I could show you what I eat for a day, but it's very tailored to my needs personally. And my worry is that if I put what my breakfast is out, then somebody who actually maybe needs to eat a bit more because they're not in a great place and they need to restore weight or whatever will look at my post and go, oh, Greenie's eating less than me, so I better not eat as much. Yes. And that is honestly what goes through people's minds. And it's because I sit here in my clinic talking to individuals and we talk about it. They get their phones out, they show me pictures of what they're comparing their intake to. And unfortunately, while that doesn't cause the eating disorder or the disorder or the dysfunctional relationship with food, it does validate it and it maintains people to stay in that place.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. I've got an individual at the moment who I'm working with and she's really struggling to change her mindset around things like dairy and calcium and those sorts of foods because she's following bloggers that say that they're bad for you. And her bone health is crumbled. It's in bits.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's why. And so I have a real issue. Whether you are qualified or not qualified, or even if you're a doctor, because there's a lot of doctors out there at the moment who are starting to sort of try and promote healthy messages and kind of put pictures of food up as well and all that kind of stuff. It's fine, but just be mindful of the fact that what you put out there actually is still going to influence and affect somebody, and it might not be in the right way. I think you have to be so, so careful.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say I never put pictures of food up, because I do, but it's usually of things like croissants and chocolate, because I want people to realize that I am all about balance, and I do love a croissant. You know, I really do. My friends will tell you. But for me, so I did write this post on Instagram, and actually I got a lot of people saying thank you, because it is so important. It doesn't matter what I eat. And when I work with individuals, I help them to achieve their nutritional goals based on them. Mm. And that's what's important, is that we can have guidelines, which we do have through government and national governing bodies and all that kind of stuff. But they are guidelines. You have to learn what works for you. So like the whole kind of sugar thing, I always say to people, yes, okay, we shouldn't be eating as much sugar as some people do, but not everybody eats that amount of sugar. So not everybody needs to then reduce it to the levels that are being said, because actually if you are a very, very active person, or you're somebody that actually needs to actively weight restore, then some of these guidelines are not appropriate for you at this moment in time. And that's the thing. It's realizing that nutrition, like everything else, is very transitional, because it depends on where you're at that moment in time for you.
And it's the same with training as well. I think people get to, Strava is another one, which is slightly different, but they'll see someone doing, they'll post about, oh, I've done my 2000th mile this year, or do you know what I mean? They get bogged down with seeing these numbers and totals that someone else is doing, and think that it's then appropriate for them to do. But you know, you're completely different to the person, you know, Paul Martelletti is completely different to me or anyone else. Like, you can't do the same training. It's not going to have the same, you can do it, but it's not going to have the same impact for you as it will for him. And it's, people do get kind of trapped down that path, don't they, really?
100%. And I think this is the thing, is, and I always say to my clients that you cannot compare yourself to anybody else, because we are all unique. You can only really ever compare yourself to yourself, and actually ask yourself why it's so important. You know, like, I mean, I compare myself to a month ago, and a month ago I wasn't in a great place, and now thankfully I'm feeling much, much more positive and much more kind of ready to tackle 2018. However, I'm also really realistic, Sean, that there will be ups and downs in 2018, because that's life. You know, so I think it's important to just, I suppose that's it. That's my big message, I suppose, is just start to realize that we are all our own person, and actually being true to yourself is probably the best message I can give to anybody, is that actually work out what's important to you, and then work out how you're going to go about achieving that, really.
Perfect. That's a great message. I think that's a message we can end on, really.
Yeah.
2018 is focus on yourself. Don't worry about what else is going on. Think about you and what you want to get out of this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
But then knock yourself up as well.
Excellent. Well, lovely to chat, and we'll hopefully be catching up again later in the year.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Bye.
Bye. Hey, Chris. Hey, Jermaine.
Hey, Sean.
How are you doing? So, Chris, you're the co-editor, co-founder of Grassroots Running Fanzine, Left Spike. How did that come about? Give us some background on the magazine.
Yeah, so we've been going for just over 2 years now, really. It started back in November 2015, at the end of there. I've done quite a bit of writing and was quite involved with 8 Lane it's a grassroots website and forum, I think it's most famous for,
yeah,
similar to like the Let's Run in the United States. And yeah, I've done quite a lot for that, a lot of the editorial, a lot of the content. And it got to a point where I saw an opportunity to create a magazine, something more tangible rather than just the online offering that it had. But then it fell through effectively at the end of November. And I suppose at the end of that, I put quite a lot of work into creating this and to creating this idea, spotting sort of a gap in the terms of, I guess, representation of grassroots distance running in the UK. Felt it wasn't being served as well as it could in terms of the likes of, I suppose, the likes of Athletics Weekly, who is more elite focused and oriented and has its focus on track and field. And then the opposite side of the coin, you've probably got like Runner's World, which is more the fitness and lifestyle oriented stuff. So there was somewhere in the middle that I thought there were a lot of great stories that weren't being told. There were lots of characters and people who weren't being recognized or being represented well enough for what they were doing for in this country. So that was the idea and why it came about. And then off the back of it, kind of not going, falling through with 8 Lane, and then I didn't want to give up on the idea, but then was supported by Hannah Viner, who supported me to do it and got behind me, and we decided that, okay, let's do it together then, why not? And so in the February of 2016 at the National Cross Country, we launched the first Left Spike fanzine. We did a small run, just 50 copies, sold out of those, distribution, yeah, mainly through events and stuff in the first instance. So yeah, that was how it came about and the story.
Because, you know, 8 Lane, people slag each other off and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So do you try and get some of the gossip, or is it all professional?
No. I would say that's one of the things that we also wanted to sort of do differently, was that we felt that the way the sport was written about and the style of the sport was not, I don't know, it was almost maybe too professional, not too professional, just, I guess, it could have been done better, could be done in a different way, it could be spoken about with a bit more personality and attitude, yeah. And I don't know, Hannah and I
charisma. That's what you need.
Yeah, exactly. And Hannah and I are both runners ourselves. We've been involved in the sport like for the last 10, 15 years. So we feel that we get it. And the people we speak to, the friends, our friendship groups and whatever, like the things we talk about and the way that we're talking about things just wasn't out there after 8 Lane died a death, I suppose, either online or in a print sort of medium, I suppose. Do you like to do opinion stuff, as you may have noticed? We think that, you know, things do need saying sometimes that aren't being said, and most of the time it's just representing the views of quite a few people anyways.
And where could listeners get their hands on a copy, or where can they pick up stories from Left Spike?
Yeah, so leftspike.com is our website. We have the fanzine on there, so it's an online, just have to plug in your email address.
Chris said to us, you get a special discount if you put Let's Get Running in there. A little 5% discount.
Actually, one of the things that we wanted to do at the first was to make it as widely available and accessible. So it's free to view online. All you need to do is plug in an email address to sign up to our newsletter and to then access the fanzine. So that's what we do. Although you can also buy a print edition, because the value of print is still something that I personally, and I know Hannah is the same, we value. We think there's still a space for it. You see other magazines like The Wind, which is real quality print, and I don't know, it's the idea of having something in your hand that you can read and flick through, and I still think there's a space for that, even though obviously the world is going more digital, everything's going online. Yeah. But I think have it as niche an area as grassroots distance running in the UK is, yeah. I think that there's an idea that print has a place in that space as well.
Yeah. And this particular episode we're doing today is a New Year special, where we're looking back at 2017, but also like looking forward and seeing
if we change things or commit resolutions for 2018. Looking back on 2017 from a grassroots running perspective, what do you think were like the main stories or the trends? Do you think there's anything happened last year that was any of it note of any interest?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the idea of events is certainly picking up a bit more. I'm seeing more grassroots events that are trying to do things a little bit differently. So talk about the Highgate Night of the 10,000 meter PBs. And then off the back of that, you had, I went to the race and I did some pacemaking there at Fast Friday, which was a 10 kilometer races and a few 5K races in Walthamstow, I think it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, the similar sort of idea of bringing people into lane three, having a bit of fun, making it a bit more relaxed, having a beer or some food, and just making it more of an event around the running itself, which I think is a cool idea that is definitely picked up a bit more in 2017 and will probably, you might see more in 2018 as well.
Yeah, because there is quite a big disconnect between sort of popular running, big half marathons like the Hackney Half that are our events, and the grassroots scene, which is quite historic, and fairly amateur, and there's a beauty in that, like old guys sitting on chairs being markers and that have run the race themselves 70 years ago, etc. It's very different worlds, but you wouldn't know if you did a half marathon that the Met League around the corner had 10 international runners who were running amazing times. But so it's quite interesting to see that now that's kind of blurring maybe a little bit and kind of these older events changing.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I think if you're new to running and you want, or you're getting into running, maybe you've done parkrun or something, and you wanted to do a race, the sort of local events, but they're run by runners and for runners. And so I think there's definitely an idea that you can get a lot more from that experience than necessarily going to your major mass participation events where you're, whilst they are obviously so entertaining, they have all sorts going on, and they're that idea of the event and doing that, I don't know, amongst friends, social groups and stuff is important to some people. Yeah. I think that actually, if you want to experience what grassroots running is and how world that it is, not sort of doing down or trying to be snobbish or anything like that. I'm just saying that actually, yes, like you just said, that these events do exist and that actually you can gain a lot from them. Yeah, it's a lot more real and tangible to get the grassroots running experience than necessarily doing the major big ones, mass participation events.
But and perhaps 2018 we'll see them competing a bit more, trying to be, as you say, more events, and perhaps we'll see that as a change. What about your kind of your personal 2017? Obviously, you're an athlete yourself. You've got a good range from 1500 meters up to half marathon. And how was your year in terms of your running?
I would say it was a bit of a mixed bag, but overall there was progression, which I'm happy with. It's all about progression. It started well at the beginning of the year. January, I ran probably my best result on paper last year when I was 10th at the Southerns.
Southern Cross Country.
Yeah, it sort of went downhill a bit through February, March, April. I got ill, missed the Armagh 5K, which I wanted to do well in. And then I had picked up a bit of an Achilles niggle over the summer, so racing was a bit more restricted. So yeah, it wasn't ideal.
Chris is a very good cheerleader. Because every race you go to, he would cheer everyone.
There you go. It's all about supporting your friends.
You need him in your corner. So what about 2018 then? Have you learned lessons from 2017 that you're going to take ahead or take with you in 2018 and change? What are those going to be?
Then built and did the Great North Run in September, and the training that I did in the lead up to that was the best training I've ever done in my life. Putting back to back for about 4 or 5 weeks, I put some of the hardest work I've ever done, and actually I came out of that race very disappointed with the result, even though it was a PB and whatever. I was very disappointed, but I think there were definitely lessons to be learned from the way that we approached that race and then subsequent races. So
for 2018
2018 I want to run sub 30 for 10k. That is one of my lifetime ambitions, so if I can do that hopefully in March, where I
do the Manchester 10k, it's short.
foot. I did that. You're talking about the Trafford 10K, right? That was the one.
Yeah.
I mean,
is that 100 meters short? I got a PB and they were like, no.
I was devastated about that. I ran a PB there that, annoyingly, even if they'd just recalibrated, you know, the distance and time, you know, that would take, it would still have been a PB, but still my PB, it just got wiped from the records, which is a bit annoying. But anyway, so yeah,
sub 30 for 10K.
Yeah, and then I want to go get PBs on the track, probably 5K in the summer. But yeah, just continue and join and progress in running. But yeah, I'd still be coaching the juniors as well. I do quite a bit of coaching at Highgate Harriers. So just to, I guess, learnings and stuff for 2018 is to continue developing in that way, learning new methods and ideas, and yeah, really using that to then use with the boys that I coach at Highgate. So
perfect. And as experienced runners, the three of us, we all know that there is miracle tips and miracle cures which can improve everyone immediately as runners. Which is, I'm just talking to you. I know that's completely false. But what is your tip for people maybe who are sort of runners listening who are looking to change their running and change their performance in 2018? Do you think you have a tip for them to improve their running next year?
Taking it, I suppose, a little bit easier. Not easier, but looking further down the field and being happy and content with the training that you're doing, not trying to rush things, knowing that you're ticking over with good amounts of training that you're doing and your base fitness and your fitness is growing. You may not be in personal best shape, you may not be running PBs every week, you may not have had a great session on the Tuesday or whatever, but knowing that you're still doing it, just make sure you're still doing something, means that when you do come round to wanting to run a PB, target a race, you're going to start from a good position.
Yeah.
I think that mental aspect of just carrying on in a way when the going gets tough, if you like, life's getting in the way, things are happening, just keep going for a 30-minute little run every day, or so every couple of days.
Bigger picture.
Yeah, just keep ticking over, because when you come to want to do that personal best or you want to target that race, to be in a decent level of fitness position to start with makes it a lot easier to then build from. Yeah, that's what I would say. And then additionally to that, I would say support your local scene. I think that is one of my sort of tips or kind of mantras is, yeah, get out and race more often. Get out and do local races and really support the volunteers, the people that are putting these things on for runners to go and do. Yeah.
Nice advice. Be consistent, enjoy the process, and get involved with your local running team. Lovely.
In a nutshell,
Lovely. So nice one, Chris. Great advice. And hopefully we'll catch up again soon.
Cheers, Sean.
See ya.
See you, Chris. Thanks a lot. Right.
See you, Jermaine.
So, great interview there, Jermaine, great couple of interviews there, and some tips and hints for 2018. Thinking about it, like in each of us in our own way has kind of had the same message in that I think this year you should think more about the moment, think more about you, and don't obsess about times and stats and all these sorts of things, and just focus, or even Instagram really kind of alluded to, just think about what you're doing for you, why it's making you happy and why you're doing it. And the lesson really is this is a hobby. This is what, you know, and the lesson
basically enjoy yourself.
Basically enjoy yourself. Yeah. Stop worrying about everything else. Do something for you. Make this year about you, which is nice. So I'm going to go and eat myself a donut in a minute. Do that for me.
And we want to big up some of the people that have been messaging in good reviews, Sean.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we just checked that out. I've had a look at the reviews this morning. There's some great ones. A nice one from Leok, if I'm pronouncing it right, on the 31st of December. It's in my top five. Really good discussions and debates about running, as well as some random banter between Sean and Jermaine. Yeah, I'll agree with that. And I've got a lovely one here from Lee W. who's as a club level runner does 60 miles a week. It's great to have a podcast that isn't just for beginners, but is relevant to those in the UK running club scene and to run obsessives and even elites. I hope to accomplish runners themselves. Thank you, Lee. And have great advice of their own. On top of this, they have interviews with top level runners. This is something for everyone here. Solid advice in all my, for all standards, in my opinion. Plus, I am already a fan of the Caramel Kid.
We might have to sneak him a little peanut bar.
So he's name checked Jermaine there, so obviously he's the favourite. But hopefully I'll up my game, well, Lee, and I'll get a mention.
Good cop, bad Sean. Good cop, bad cop. White Devil can't be the good guy.
Very true. We also saw this week in the Vitality magazine, if you don't know if you guys, anyone has Vitality Health Insurance, we had a mention in there as well, one of their three recommended podcasts alongside the Infinite Monkey Cage, which is with that lad from, he used to be in D-Ream. What's his name again? Oh, he's an astrologer, Brian Cox, that's the guy. So we're being linked or being likened or listed alongside... luminaries.
They squeezed us in.
Which is really good. So that's cool. So yeah, please help us to increase, keep spreading the word about the show. Any reviews you can give us, or just like telling people about the podcast, is really helpful to us. And also obviously with the, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, get liking and sharing tweets about this particular episode or Facebook posts about this particular episode, or even put it on Instagram. It'd be great. If you do, we enter you in that competition. We're going to send each and every person who does do that 20% off all products on the website for Meridian. But yeah, you got a chance to win a good hamper. So let's see your entries flying in for that. And hopefully we'll be sending that out to you before the next show. Excellent.
Yeah, the peanut butter special. We call that the peanut butter special.
Yeah, the peanut butter special. I'm going to have to change my name from the White Devil. I don't know how I can do the peanut. Nah, anyway, I'll leave that.
There might be a bad side effects to that nickname.
Yeah, maybe I'll just quickly change the subject. So what have you got coming up, Jermaine? Anything going on in the next couple of weeks?
Just working, really. That's it.
Yeah, it's the grind in January. Back to work. We've all overdone it over Christmas.
You got to pay off all the big Christmas presents that we got.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm off to Venice. Mr. Flush. It's my wife's birthday. Happy birthday to my lovely wife. She's 31. I shouldn't mention that on the air. That's a big. I'm gonna have to cut that bit out. But we're off to Venice, which is going to be very nice. We're doing that on the same weekend as the Southern Cross Country, so I'm not going to be racing there, but I will be racing the National Cross Country, representing Highgate, and we're going to hopefully be national, well, up in amongst the conversation for the medals at the National Cross, which is really exciting. So, yeah, hopefully see, if we don't catch you guys soon, we will see you at races in the near future. Nice one.
Cool.
See you later, guys.
See ya, bye.
Bye.